It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking with Dr. Kat, epidemiologist. She uses the social media platform TikTok to break down complicated pandemic-related science into digestible 60-second videos like this one.
Hi, Dr. Kat, epidemiologist. I want to talk today about death certificates because I've got a couple comments about how deaths are miscoded, like sometimes heart attacks are coded as COVID. And I think this is a misunderstanding, which I can clarify.
What public health or pandemic developments are confusing? What do you want Dr. Kat to demystify? It's 800-642-1234. Katrine Wallace is an adjunct assistant professor at University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health. She's known as Dr. Kat, epidemiologist on TikTok, where she makes public health videos. Kat, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, welcome for thank you for having me.
So what got you started in making these videos on TikTok?
Well, at the beginning of this pandemic, I really thought that I would be talking about, you know, I noticed there's just a lot of misinformation online when I would kind of be looking through my social media feeds or even kind of in the regular media, I was just noticing some either misunderstandings or misconceptions about how deaths were coded or, you know, just how things were done on a public health level. And so I really thought that there would be just an opportunity for me to kind of talk about these things on social media, because there's just a gap between the scientists doing the science and then the regular lay people that weren't going to read the scientific literature. So I thought there was a real opportunity as a scientist to kind of speak directly to people that way that maybe wouldn't otherwise read the scientific literature.
Yeah, you know, TikTok reports it has about 850 million monthly active users. Why this social networking platform?
So that's a great question, actually, because I wasn't even on TikTok before the quarantine kind of started in March. I was on Facebook and Instagram, and I still actually maintain a presence on Instagram, but TikTok gave me a great opportunity to create and edit videos within the app. And also it has a kind of for you page function where my videos that end up doing well get pushed out to a lot of users. It has like this algorithm that pushes out your successful content to a lot of users. So actually it enabled me to build a following actually very quickly. I was really surprised at how quickly and how interested people were in my content. So it actually just kind of grew a lot faster than I would have expected.
And our natural question here, is it a younger audience that you're trying to connect with on this information?
So I think it is a younger audience. It's definitely mixed. I don't have in my analytics a breakdown of the ages like you do on some of the other social media apps, but I know a lot of the people that follow me are healthcare professionals, because I can tell from their comments, and I've actually become friends with a lot of healthcare professionals and other public health people on the app, which is nice. But there are also a lot of younger people too that either want to go into public health or want to become an epidemiologist, and they ask me about my path, which it actually kind of humbles me and makes me very proud to inspire people in that way. Especially during a pandemic. But yes, I think a lot of people go to social media for their news now. So being a kind of real source of information is just something that I'm compelled to do.
We're talking with epidemiologist Kat Wallace, who goes by Dr. Kat Epidemiologist on TikTok. You can join in. Have you talked with family members about the pandemic? What's been effective in reaching skeptical minds? Do you use TikTok to get your information or another social media platform? Where are you getting your information about COVID-19? 800-642-1234 to join in. So when you make these videos, you know, what is your overarching goal here? Is it just the clarity of the information? Because you have to break down something really complex very quickly. Like, good luck with that, Kat.
I'm not known for my brevity. So it's been very, I'm used to having an hour class period to discuss these kind of issues. So to me, this has been a very important exercise in being concise. So it is difficult. But yes, at first I went on to just kind of explain, I was thinking I would explain like epidemiology modeling and how we, you know, how we do things on as epidemiologists and how we come up with this information. But the questions people had and the information people needed were like a basic level of information, like when should I take a test? And, you know, it was very surprising to me just the amount of different conceptions of the truth that were out there and all the misinformation and the fact we could do a whole radio show just about the misinformation and all of the things that I've had to kind of debunk along the way. But I just felt like, you know, you can put something on TikTok and thousands of people will see it, you know, hundreds of thousands of people will see it versus, you know, in the scientific literature, these people wouldn't necessarily be getting that same information.
So, you know, in this area of misinformation, how do you address skeptics? What do you say and say very quickly?
I get a lot of skeptics. And I mean, basically you can really really point people towards a few pieces of information that really kind of are indisputable with COVID-19. And one is the amount of excess mortality we've had in the United States in 2020. So, you know, people can say that the deaths are miscoded and that it's really the flu and that, you know, I get all kinds of different theories and misconceptions kind of thrown at me. But then you can really say, you know, we've had like 300,000 deaths over what would have been expected given the data in the last 5 years in the United States. And we're actually pretty good at predicting mortality. It's something we've been doing for years. And to have this much excess mortality is really quite unusual.
You know, mask wearing has been a very contentious issue. And what about this notion that, you know, we have mask mandates, and yet we still see skyrocketing case numbers?
Yeah, so I get that question a lot also. And I always kind of remind people that mask mandates really only will mandate the mask be used in public, because that's all we can really mandate, right? No, we meaning, you know, the government, not me. But we're seeing in my area, 2 out of 3 new cases of COVID-19 are happening in homes with people gathering without masks on. And that's not a place where the state can mandate masks. So it's concerning that, you know, even though there is a mask mandate, 2/3 of the cases are happening in in-home gatherings.
Yeah. Do you think public health departments should be online more or using social media channels to convey their messages and to convey this public health information?
I mean, I think I don't know in what a capacity they would do it, but it's been pretty successful for me. And I feel like I am making a difference. Sometimes it feels like the problem is bigger than me and I get frustrated that there is so much misinformation out there. But then I remember the people that say to me, I feel like you're the only person that makes me feel like I'm not crazy. And that makes me keep doing it, because I feel like there are people out there that are trying to convince their families and their employers that this is real and that they need somebody to help them and know where to get the right information.
Kat Wallace, better known as Dr. Kat, epidemiologist on the social media app TikTok. She uses her platform to answer questions or clarify scientific findings about the pandemic. What are the most frequently asked questions you hear about life during the COVID crisis? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Kat, epidemiologist on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we have Kat Wallace on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. She's better known as Dr. Kat Epidemiologist on the social media app TikTok, where she makes public health videos breaking down complex science into digestible and more easily understandable parts in 60 seconds, I might add. How do you think public health officials can better explain infectious diseases to the public? Hey, Gen Z, are you listening? Do you get your COVID pandemic info from what you come across on social media platforms or the For You page on TikTok? Tell us about it, 800-642-1234. And Dr. Kat, epidemiologist, stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Lisa now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. My concern in general with the social media is, you know, even people who understand this is a crisis, what's happening, that when they engage with people, they're doing it in such a disrespectful manner. They're shaming. And, you know, when I come across somebody and I'm trying to talk with them, a lot of times they might make nastier derogatory comments back, but I continue to try and engage in a respectful way, presenting what facts I'm aware of and what I understand. And those people either drop out or they will then start engaging with me and we have a discussion. People would try to discuss it rather than shame or be nasty or rude.
Lisa, thank you for that. And, you know, trying to be respectful there is Lisa's through line, Kat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. So I will say that there is a divide between people that believe that masks absolutely don't work or that masks make you sick. And then there's people that are sort of more on the side of public health that believe that masks are actually saving lives. So it's very difficult when people kind of, and I don't absolutely condone any kind of nasty behavior, but it's hard to see the side of people that refuse to wear masks to me, because we do know that masks work as source control, and people are very against them. And we have a lot of data that masks work as source control, which means that it protects the environment from your respiratory droplets, which is how this virus transmits. So it's, you know, there's a profound misunderstanding, I think, how masks work. Like, people think masks are meant to protect the wearer, and there isn't a lot of data to support that. But there is a lot of data supporting that if everybody wears one, it controls the spread of respiratory droplets into the community, which is how the virus spreads. So it's hard, I think, for people that understand that and want to save lives. It's hard for us to hear that people refuse to wear them. So I think that's why some of that vitriol is going on. And I'm sorry that happens, but it is kind of a hot button issue, I guess.
We're talking with epidemiologist Kat Wallace, who stands out with her Dr. Kat Epidemiologist TikTok videos that break down complex scientific things and use clear language. She's taking your questions about COVID and what you want to know about it. 800-642-1234. Richard is joining us from Oneida County. Hi, Richard. What's your question?
Yes. Hello. I'm curious about COVID-19, and it's going around that if you have the flu and COVID-19, they'll both test positive. Is the COVID-19 testing positive for flu and not COVID-19?
No, they're both separate viruses with totally distinct genetic material, so the test for one would not show up positive for the other one. So I think there is a lot of misinformation kind of being spread online that the flu is gone or that now everything is being coded as COVID. But in actuality, in the Northern Hemisphere, our flu season only just started about 4 weeks ago, and our flu activity is always very low at this time. It peaks in January, February. So, you know, and in the Southern Hemisphere, they actually did have a more mild flu season, but it wasn't because testing was faulty. It's because that the Southern Hemisphere's flu season happened during our summer, because mm-hmm. their seasons are opposite. And the same things that prevent COVID-19 with the respiratory droplets also prevent influenza.
Richard, thank you for that question. You know, Kat, there are dashboards galore, numbers flying at us every day. Yeah. And often, you know, reported information from local, state, and federal officials may not overlap, may not be the same. How should we make sense of these dashboards and the sea of COVID data?
So actually, when I was preparing for this interview, I was taking a look at the Wisconsin dashboard. And I actually think your dashboard, I look at these all the time, as you might imagine, but I think your Wisconsin dashboard is actually fantastic.
Wow, cool. Okay.
I actually really, you guys break it down very, I think it's very easy to read and very, I think it's really good. And I like how you guys have the percent positivity by person and by test, because I think that's misunderstood out there. People think that all the tests are just being counted as a positive person, but on your dashboard, it's very easy to see that's not the case.
Okay.
Even if someone tests multiple times.
Well, with that being said, there the data is it, you know, you break it down in so many ways, but how important is, for instance, to look at long-term trends or to pay attention, maybe not just day-to-day numbers, but, you know, more of longer-term numbers?
So that's, trends are very important with COVID-19 because this virus spreads exponentially. And what I mean by that is if it had, every person is going to infect more than one other person in this, and in this case, we think it's the average is about 2.5. So when you look at Wisconsin's trends, it took about 7 months for you guys to reach 100,000 cases. And then it only took 36 days because of the amount of virus in the community. It only took 36 days for you guys to double that to 201,000. And then just another 18 days to reach 300,000. So that's what, where the trends come in, and that doubling time, and that, you know, that is really, in the tripling time, that's really important to look at, because that's how you can see the exponential spread in the community.
What advice do you have for people who are making plans for Thanksgiving next week?
So Thanksgiving is there's, I think every public health agency at this point has issued a kind of very strong suggestion that we should not be having traditional Thanksgiving with people outside your home where you don't live with, that you don't live with. Like I was mentioning at the beginning of my segment, is that like 2 out of 3 in my area of new cases of COVID-19 are because of in-home gatherings without a mask on with people that you don't live with. And, you know, a Thanksgiving dinner, obviously you have to take your mask off to eat. It's just very concerning given the amount of community spread we have. It just isn't suggested.
When do you recommend someone gets a test for COVID-19?
So that's a great follow-up question, because a lot of people are like, oh, well, if I just get a test, then I can go to my grandma's for Thanksgiving. And it's not that simple, because the test is really most accurate at like days like 5 through 7 post-exposure, really days 6, 7 is what we kind of recommend. And if you're out every day at work and going to the grocery store and seeing people, it's hard to know when an exposure would have taken place unless you quarantine for a week before taking that test. And at this point, you really don't have that time before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Joshua is joining us from Watertown now with a question. Hi, Joshua.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. Well, it's rather an observation. NPR reported that the COVID-19 test, according to the CDC, is actually doing an investigation based on 30% of the tests were flawed. At least 30% of the COVID-19 tests were inaccurate. So positive cases were becoming negative, and negative cases were becoming positive. So I wanted to know from the epidemiologist, has she heard that report? Because NPR actually reported on that.
I actually haven't seen that report.
Yeah, and you know, certainly it is a concern as to how, you know, how reliable our tests. Rapid tests have been said to be more of like a triage type test that you want.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Yeah, the rapid test is better for, it's kind of like, you know, if you think about it, you have different levels of testing for like you know, screening versus like real diagnostic testing. So if it's a healthy population that wants to just kind of test like schools, you know, if you want to give rapid tests to children in schools that are asymptomatic, that's perfectly appropriate. If you have, then if somebody came up positive, you'd want to repeat that with the PCR test, which is more sensitive.
So as we start to wrap up here, what are you watching for on the vaccine front?
So we have two exciting vaccine categories or two vaccine candidates that have given interim analysis data, which showed like an over 95% efficacy, both of them. So that's very exciting. And last night, Dr. Fauci was on TV talking about how he was envisioning this to be rolled out, you know, to high risk populations by December, January. So that is very exciting.
Kat, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kat Wallace, an adjunct assistant professor at University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health. She's known as Dr. Kat, epidemiologist on the social media app TikTok. Coming up, we catch up with two childcare providers as they navigate running their businesses in the pandemic. Parents, is your child at a daycare center? How is it going? What have you learned? 800-642-1234. We'll check in on daycare operations after this news update on the Ideas Network.